beautiful night.
It's cold is what it is.
You're cold? Here, put it around your shoulders.
Such a gentleman.
You know me.
I ate like a horse tonight. I can barely move.
That's fine. You can just lay there. It's easier.
I take it back. You're no gentleman at all.
I told your mother I'm a nice boy. Haven't been made a liar yet.
That's because I'm such a nice girl.
Are you still cold?
Well, maybe a little.
Well, come here.
Like I haven't heard that one before.
Baby, it's cold outside. Just slide over. See? Isn't that better?
It is.
My God, your hands are like ice.
I told you. Are you sad we missed the concert?
Not at all. See? We have our own, just for us.
Don't you wish you could just stay out here forever?
You'll miss your 45s.
No, I think I'd love it.
Yeah? You want to be a mountain woman?
You want to come with me?
I'd miss my 45s too much.
Were you expecting a friend?
Hmm?
Someone parked right next to us.
On December 20th, 1968, David Faraday and Betty Lou Jensen met for their first date.
The couple parked at a lover's lane on Lake Herman Road, a relatively remote area in the northern California city of Benicia.
There was no one there to interrupt them until another man showed up.
Someone's getting out.
I'm sure he's just stargazing.
David, he's coming up to the...
Roll down your window.
No.
Roll down your window.
David? He has a gun. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Step out of the car.
Lake Herman Road was a dark stretch of highway with no homes or businesses within running distance of the gravel turnout where the teenagers had parked.
Get out of the car.
Okay. Okay, just... You don't need the gun. See, we're getting out. It's okay, just do what he says. See, she's out. I'm going to... Ah!
What should have been just typical teenage activity between young lovers instead turned into every parent's worst nightmare.
And though no one suspected it at the time, it was the first calling card for the killer that would hold the Bay Area in a perpetual state of fear during his reign.
Welcome to Unsolved Murders, True Crime Stories. I'm Carter Roy.
And I'm Wendy McKenzie.
This is episode number 26 of Unsolved Murders, True Crime Stories, and the first into our Zodiac Killer investigation. If you want to review an episode of Unsolved Murders or hear our investigation into other cases, you can find them all on your favorite podcast directory. And don't forget to subscribe. You can also listen on our website, parcast.com. That's parcast.com. A new episode comes out every Tuesday.
Now travel back with us to the sprawling stretch of land between Sacramento and Fresno, the San Francisco Bay Area.
For 10 months between 1968 and 1969, a murderer who nicknamed himself the Zodiac killed a confirmed 5 victims, but his crimes may have started all the way back in 1963. He would become best known for the taunting letters and ciphers he sent to all major Bay Area newspapers, most famously the San Francisco Chronicle.
But in order to become infamous, the Zodiac had to get his feet wet. And 2 teenagers who had done no wrong to anyone were the gateway that he needed.
Jeez, it's cold.
Blow out your breath. Look like a dragon.
Yeah, that'll be the day. Right. The boy's David Faraday, 17. She's Betty Lou Jensen, 16 years old.
God save us. Where's the boy?
They have him in an ambulance.
Is he going to be able to tell us anything?
The kid could barely breathe, let alone utter a syllable. I doubt he makes it through the night.
Where was he shot?
Straight through the skull. Hey! Bag up the clothing, try to get any residue, yeah?
What are you thinking, Lundblad? Robbery?
Nothing missing from the car. Betty Lou's purse is still here and still got everything in it. $30, lipstick, month's supply of the pill.
God, I wish the pill could have been around when Sherry and I were their age. Sorry, sorry. Didn't mean to make light. I don't know why I said that.
The boy's wallet was full, too. Hell, Even the car is still here.
Jealous ex, maybe?
You think some kid grabbed a gun and did this?
Could do.
Never.
Kids these days. Wouldn't shock me at all. I heard about this one guy. Plans this elaborate way to ask his sweetheart to homecoming. Must have spent a week's worth of wages. Only she doesn't want to go. So this kid goes over to her house the next night and murders her and her entire family with an axe.
Guess you might be right. Could be a crime of passion. I'll keep a look around the scene if you want to go back and log what we've already got into evidence.
Officer Lundblad wouldn't find anything on the scene, not even a legible fingerprint.
Others had seen them in the car between 10:15 and 11, but nothing seemed amiss.
By 11:15, however, the gruesome deed had been done.
The bodies of David Faraday and Betty Lou Jensen were found outside the car, which was perforated with several bullet holes.
Betty Lou was already dead, with 5 gunshot wounds in her back. She appeared to have been running from the car before she was shot.
David was still alive and rushed to the hospital. He had been shot close range in the head, and he died en route.
The police would investigate, but they didn't have much in the way of witnesses.
State your name for the record.
Bill Crow.
Bill, how did you come to be in this same part of Lake Herman Road?
My parents are both home, so are Shelley's.
And Shelley is?
My girlfriend. So, yeah, we couldn't go to each other's houses. We're kids, you know. We can't be affording a motel every time we want to, you know. So kids go to that spot.
It's fairly well known, that location?
Well, not too well known, or it wouldn't be a good spot.
Did you see David and Betty Lou?
We were there about 45 minutes earlier. We did see something freaky.
Something freaky?
A white Chevy.
What made this white Chevy freaky?
So I'm with my girlfriend, and she was allowed to borrow her dad's car, a Stingray. They're so rad. We've been driving it around and testing it out, seeing how fast it could go, but within the speed limit.
Just continue with what happened.
We pulled over to the turnout. We were kissing, and then we see this white Chevy coming from the highway, and when it passed the turnout, it just stopped instantly. And I saw the reverse lights come on and the car start backing toward us.
What did you do then?
What anyone would do. Get the hell out of there. I put the car in gear and just floored the pedal. And then this car followed us, almost as fast as we were going. They were clearly chasing me and gaining on me. There was a fork coming up. One goes back toward Benicia and the other goes toward Vallejo. I took the one to Benicia and the car drove the other way. I didn't see them again.
Did you tell anyone what you saw?
No.
It slipped your mind?
It was just a car.
But it was freaky enough for you to remember.
Well, yeah, I didn't know he was going to kill anyone back then, did I?
The police also spoke to 2 hunters who had reported seeing a white Chevy parked on a gravel turnaround.
The hunters actually went up to the vehicle to see if anybody was inside, but they saw no one and they continued on their way.
Without any more witnesses or evidence, the police would find nothing. No motive, no suspect.
The case left them baffled, and there wouldn't be any new leads until 6 months later in the summer of 69.
Our story will continue in a moment after the break.
And now, let's continue our story.
Hello, we're actually closed right now, sir. Oh my gosh, Michael!
You sure you don't have time for one more customer?
I guess we can squeeze you in.
Rad. Waffles would really hit the spot right now.
If you think I'm going back and dirty in the kitchen after I just got done cleaning it, you're dreaming.
All right. Hey. How about just a little sugar, then?
Fine, but only if you can promise not to be messy.
Sorry, can't promise that. If you give me some sugar.
It's always messy.
Darlene Farron was a waitress at Terry's Waffle Shop in Vallejo.
Terry's was about 4.5 miles away from the Blue Rock Springs Park. The parking lot and the park itself were popular spots for teenagers with romance on the mind.
Unfortunately, that also made it a spot for certain unwelcome visitors.
Hold up. There's a way to recline this seat.
It's fine, Michael.
Not for you, maybe. I'm getting a cramp in my back already.
Such a wimp. I thought I was dating a man, not a boy.
All right. I'll stop whining.
Ah! What the heck was that?
Oh, Just kids. Just kids playing with some firecrackers.
It's the 4th of July. Are you gonna get this jittered every single time someone shoots off fireworks tonight?
Oh, come on. I wasn't scared.
Really? I'm not sure I could pull off a scream like you could.
Well, we'll see where the night takes us.
You're bad.
I wasn't scared.
No, of course not. Just a brave, manly man, aren't you?
And don't you forget it.
The couple had only been parked for a few minutes before a car pulled up alongside them, its headlights extinguished.
The car just sat there for a whole minute.
Hey, Dee, do you know who that is?
Oh, never mind. It's a park. There's going to be people coming and going. Let's just enjoy ourselves.
The car moved off again, heading towards Vallejo.
However, just 5 minutes later, that same car returned.
It pulled up just 10 feet behind Michael and Darlene's car.
He's coming towards us.
What's that in his hand?
Oh my, it's so bright. Why is he shining a flashlight in our faces like that?
Damn, it's probably a cop.
Oh crap, fix your hair.
Hello, sir. I'm just getting my registration and...
The Zodiac Killer struck again.
He fired 5 shots initially at the couple. Michael's fight-or-flight response kicked in, and he launched himself into the back seat.
Help! Someone help me! Please! She's bleeding! Help me!
The shooter began to leave, but when he heard Michael's howls of pain, he returned to the car, shooting each victim 2 more times.
The killer then sped away towards Vallejo.
A son of a caretaker at Blue Rock Springs Park, George Bryant, lived just a few hundred feet away and obviously heard all the noise. But seeing as it was the 4th of July, he figured it was just typical Independence Day celebration.
Luckily, others were driving down the same road.
Gee, slow down, Jerry. We're gonna miss the park.
It's like a half a mile away still. We're good.
Wait, no. That was the turn, dummy.
Told you.
All right, all right. For the first time in his life, Roger was right. I'm sure we're all very shocked. Happy?
I'm always happy to prove you wrong, bud.
Where are you going, Deb? We're gonna smoke it in the car.
That's why I want to look around, see if there are any other cars.
Ugh, we would have seen them already.
Nah, I'm with Debbie. Doesn't hurt to double check. Plus, there's no way you're right twice in one night.
Oh, hell. There's someone over there.
It's probably other kids just hooking up.
They've already probably hotboxed, too. Look at that car. Old people don't drive that car.
I saw an old guy driving a Corvette the other day. They don't discriminate when it comes to cars. They can drive anything.
Well, why are they just parked there, then?
Help!
What the hell?
Help me!
Mister. Mister, are you okay?
Help me. Please.
Look at him. Oh, my.
The first two responding officers, Richard Hoffman and Ed Rust, arrived at the crime scene separately.
Hoffman, what's going
on? Get EMT out here immediately.
Hoffman was looking after Michael, who lay on the ground by the open car door. Darlene lay still behind the steering wheel.
Ma'am, can you hear me?
Oh.
It's all right, ma'am. We'll get you help.
The victims were rushed to the hospital. Darlene was pronounced dead by the time she got there.
Michael, on the other hand, miraculously pulled through.
What can you tell us about the attacker?
He was a bigger guy, 5'8", and, you know, bigger.
Overweight?
No, not really. Not really fat, just beefy.
Could you see anything else?
It all happened so fast. He had that damn flashlight in our faces. He had short, curly hair, I saw that. Light brown, almost blonde. We might have... Darlene, where is she? Please, tell me she's okay.
I'm sorry, son.
Darlene.
The attack had occurred sometime around midnight. About 40 minutes later, a police dispatcher had received a very strange call.
911, what's your emergency?
I wish to report a double murder. If you will go 1 mile east on Columbus Parkway to a public park, you will find the kids in a brown car. They've been shot by a 9mm Luger. I also killed those kids last year. Goodbye.
The The dispatcher who received the call was Nancy Slover.
She said the man who called spoke in a rehearsed monotone way. His tone sounded like he was mocking and jeering her for shock value.
She also said it was very effective at its intended purpose.
It was strange for the killer to reach out to the police like this without the intent of turning himself in, but it was only the beginning of the strangeness in this case.
And just 1 month later, someone claiming to be the Zodiac Killer would reach out again.
Only this time, it wasn't the police he spoke to.
The San Francisco Examiner, San Francisco Chronicle, and Vallejo Times-Herald were recipients of nearly identical letters sent July 31, 1969.
The letters contained details of the two crimes, and also each included a coded message.
Chief of Police Jack E. Stiltz was unimpressed, thinking it to be some prankster. He asked the writer of the letters to follow up with more details, in one article in the Chronicle on August 2nd and another in the Examiner on August 3rd.
The writer didn't take long to respond. Just one day later, he sent what has come to be known as the Debut of Zodiac letter.
This is the Zodiac speaking. In answer to your asking for more details about the good times I had in Vallejo, I shall be very happy to supply even more material. By the way, are the police having a good time with the code? If not, tell them to cheer up. When they do crack it, they will have me. On the 4th of July, I did not open the car door. The window was rolled down already. The boy was originally sitting in the front seat when I began firing. When I fired the first shot at his head, he leaped backwards at the same time, thus spoiling my aim. He ended up on the back seat, then the floor in back, thrashing out very violently with his legs. That's how I shot him in the knee. I did not leave the scene of the killing with squealing tires and racing engine, as described in the Vallejo paper. I drove away quite slowly, so as not to draw attention to my car. The man who told police that my car was brown was a Negro, about 40 to 45, rather shabbily dressed. I was in this phone booth having some fun with the Vallejo cop when he was walking by. When I hung the phone up, the damn thing began to ring, and that drew his attention to me and my car. Last Christmas, in that episode, the police were wondering how I could shoot and hit my victims in the dark. They did not openly state this, but implied this by saying it was a well-lit night, and I could see silhouettes on the horizon. Bullshit. That area is surrounded by high hills and trees. What I did was tape a small pencil flashlight to the barrel of my gun. If you notice, in the center of the beam of light, if you aim it at a wall or ceiling, you will see a black or dark spot in the center of the circle of light, about 3 to 6 inches across. When taped to a gun barrel, the bullet will strike in the center of the black dot in the light. All I had to do was spray them as if it was a water hose. There was no need to use the gun sights. I was not happy to see that I did not get front page coverage.
At the bottom of this note was the Zodiac symbol, two crossed lines with their center circled, which came to stand for terror in San Francisco.
And under that, in large capital letters, no address.
Well, the letter was a clear response to the police chief. Whoever was writing these letters was aware of what the police were thinking and addressed them directly.
Paul Avery was a police reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, and Templeton Peck was his editor. They pored over the Zodiac letters endlessly.
The son of a bitch is having a good time, isn't he?
How did they miss him using the scope?
The pen light?
Yeah, he's right. The place is dark as sin. So how did they miss that he had to use a light?
What's eating you?
What else have they missed?
If we knew that, it wouldn't be missing, would it? And it sure as hell would be in our paper.
Should we call the Examiner? Offer our condolences to whoever had to read that? Well, it was just one run-on sentence, wasn't it?
Better them than us.
2 months after the letter was sent to the Examiner, and 1 month after the Zodiac's horrific attack on college students Cecilia Shepherd and Brian Hartnell, who were picnicking at Lake Berryessa, the Zodiac would claim his final victim.
It's dark out, ain't it?
Very.
Were you waiting long? No? Good thing. Damn fog could freeze you solid. So, you headed somewhere special tonight?
Very.
Yeah, that's nice. The Presidio's a nice place. Too expensive for me, but they got some good...
You can stop here.
You sure? I think I might have overshot the street.
Stop.
All right, buddy, that'll be...
Cab driver Paul Stein picked up the Zodiac at Union Square and drove him to the Presidio. At 9:55 p.m., while the cab was idling, the killer shot Paul point-blank in the head and robbed his cab.
He also tore off a piece of Paul's bloody shirt, all while managing not to leave a legible fingerprint on the crime scene. We'll return to our story in just a moment from the Parcast Network.
Now back to the Zodiac Killer letter.
Letter to the editor.
Bring it in.
It's one of his.
Nobody else touch it. Someone call the police. It could have his fingerprints.
This is the Zodiac speaking. I am the murderer of the taxi driver over by Washington Street and Maple Street last night. To prove this, here is a bloodstained piece of his shirt. I am the same man who did it to people in the North Bay area.
The killer sent a letter to the Chronicle 2 days after the murder with the missing piece of Paul's shirt enclosed in the envelope.
With the murders at their apex and the letters heating up, SFPD Detective Dave Toshi and his partner Bill Armstrong were officially transferred to the case.
Oh, by the way, Toshi, for some of our classic movie fans out there, was the inspiration for Steve McQueen's bullet.
Did anyone touch it?
Me.
Me, I'm sorry.
Me.
Now why in the hell would you do that?
I was curious.
Perfect.
Just dust around our prints.
Now why didn't I think of that?
Did you read that part at the end?
Yes.
So, are you gonna do something? I got a kid.
I promise you we're taking it seriously. We won't let anything happen.
You're taking it seriously like Lundblad took it seriously? I'm sure Paul appreciates it. Or those two kids up at the lake.
Hey, wanna cool it for a second?
Along with Paul Stein's bloody shirt, the Zodiac ended his letter with a warning that left all of San Francisco shaken and afraid.
School children make nice targets. I think I shall wipe out a school bus some morning. Just shoot out the front tire and then pick off the kiddies as they come bouncing out.
The city went on high alert, and a week later the public would allegedly hear from the man terrorizing their home.
A man claiming to be the Zodiac called the Oakland PD the morning of October 20th and demanded to speak with attorney F. Lee Bailey, who would later become an infamous part of O.J. Simpson's dream team.
In the event that they were unable to secure Bailey, he said he would also accept local San Francisco lawyer Melvin Belli.
Belli went on to popular local morning show AM San Francisco, where he and host Jim Dunbar waited for his call.
And call he did. He called himself Sam.
Sam, let me ask you a question. Did you attempt to call this program one other time when Mr. Belli was with us? And you
what?
Did you try to call us one other time about two or three weeks ago when Mel Belli was with us?
Yeah.
And we couldn't get through. The phones were tied up. Was that it?
Yeah.
Sam was fearful and timid, far from the arrogant, smug villain in his letters. He spoke of debilitating headaches and expressed his fear of getting the death penalty.
Sam, let me ask you this. There's some reason why you go to a particular doctor or a particular priest, and some reason why apparently you wanted to talk to me or Lee. Is it that you feel that we have compassion for people who get in trouble? Or is it you feel that we can do something for you? Or is it you feel that we have enough integrity that if we promise you something, that we're going to stick to it?
Well, let's find out why he wanted to talk to you. Why did you want to talk to Mr. Belli, Sam?
I don't want to be hurt.
The live phone call captivated America, though it was later proven a mental patient was impersonating the killer.
A year, almost to the day, after the Paul Stein murder, Chronicle crime reporter Paul Avery received a Halloween card from the Zodiac.
I feel it in my bones. You ache to know my name. And so I'll clue you in. But why spoil the game?
He included yet another cipher, but no discernible name could be identified. He also claimed to have burned, hung, shot, and stabbed his victims. But only the knife and gun in the cipher were accurate.
The letter so spooked Avery that he began carrying a .38 caliber revolver.
Hey, I got you something. You like them? Got them made up this last weekend.
With a proverbial target on his back, Paul Avery became infamous among the Chronicle staff.
Well, so infamous, a co-worker crafted up special buttons to wear, reading, "I am not Paul Avery." Nearly everyone at the newspaper wore one.
Where's mine?
You think that's a good idea?
I'd say I need it more than any of you turncoats. Come on.
Wear it proudly.
Oh, it's going front and center. What do you think? Does it look good?
It looks incredible. Hey, everyone, grab a button.
Speaking of buttons, in his later letters, the Zodiac called for buttons to be made with his symbol on them, for all of San Francisco to wear.
When the idea didn't catch on, he expressed his frustration with the people of San Francisco, threatening more killings unless they wore his souvenirs.
This is the Zodiac speaking. I've become very upset with the people of San Fran Bay Area. They have not complied with my wishes for them to wear some nice Zodiac buttons. I promised to punish them if they did not comply by annihilating a full school bus. But now school is out for the summer. So I punished them in another way. I shot a man sitting in a parked car with a .38.
No one did, and yet no new murders cropped up. The police were unable to verify his claims about a new man shot in a car.
The Zodiac was a ghost in the wind, always flitting in and out of the papers just when the public's interest started to wane.
Though the Zodiac did not claim any more victims after Paul Stein, his reign of terror would not end until March 1970.
7-month pregnant Kathleen Johns was driving just past Modesto when the car behind her began flashing its lights and honking.
What in the hell?
Ma'am, I'm so sorry, but your tire is about to come off.
Excuse me?
Your tire. Your back tire. Didn't you feel your car listing to the side?
No, I didn't feel anything. It's really loose.
Dangerously. It looks like it's going to fall right off. I have a kit in the car. I can tighten it for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Is it working?
You should be all set.
You're a real lifesaver, sir. I don't have any money, but...
No need. I'm just glad I was around to help.
Me too. You have a good night.
Once Kathleen pulled onto the highway, her wheel almost immediately spun off.
And the same car pulled up beside her again and offered her a ride.
It was a cold night, and Kathleen bundled up her 10-month-old daughter, who was also in the car, and accepted.
I thought you said it was tightened.
It was. It must have been worse off than I thought.
I think we passed a gas station.
It was closed.
The lights were on.
I found another.
He drove her in circles for an hour and a half.
Let us out. Please, please just let us out. We won't cause any trouble.
How old is your baby?
What?
She looks small.
She is. She's small. And she hasn't hurt anyone. Please, please let us go.
Why are you so scared? I haven't done anything yet.
When he slowed the car, Kathleen jumped down and sprinted away with her daughter. She hid in a field while the man searched for her.
Shh, shh, shh. Oh, please. Please, not now, please.
Lady. Hey, lady. Come on out. I'm not going to hurt you. I was just kidding. I'll get a tow truck for your car. Come out! Now!
Eventually, the man drove away, and Kathleen hitched her and her daughter to safety.
He was average. There was nothing special about him.
You're sure?
He looked helpful. I'm sorry. She's hungry.
But then something caught her eye.
Wait. Who is that man?
That's the man who killed that cab driver in San Francisco.
That was him. That's the man that picked me up.
Are you sure? Are you positive.
That's him! That's him!
When the police finally found Kathleen's car, it had been set on fire.
By all accounts, she and her daughter were the only people to tangle with the Zodiac and escape with no injuries.
Find him. We have to find him.
What are we doing, playing games?
What happens the next time he picks someone up? What happens when he doesn't let that one get away?
We'll catch him. We gotta. It's a brave new world, Dave. No way someone does all this and gets away with it.
Not only would the Zodiac get away with it, but he would also create a litany of suspects and theories that have kept the world guessing the identity of this strange killer who was so proud of his work and who seemingly wanted to be caught.
What was the Zodiac killer's connection to his victims, to the police, to the reporters that he sent his letters to? And were these truly his only crimes? Or did the Zodiac killer's reign of terror extend even farther than the murders he proudly took credit for? We hope you'll join us again for our second installment into the Zodiac Killer.
Don't forget to subscribe to Unsolved Murders on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, or any other podcast directory, or through our website, parcast.com. Again, that's parcast.com. Join the conversation on our Parcast Facebook page. You can tweet us at Parcast Network, all one word.
If you liked what you've heard, tell your friends.
We thank you for listening. New episodes come out every Tuesday. I'm Carter Roy.
And I'm Wendy McKenzie.
We'll see you next time.
If we live till next time.
Unsolved Murders True Crime Stories was created by Max Cutler, is a production of Cutler Media, and is part of the Parcast Network. It is produced by Ron and Max Cutler, sound designed by Ron Shapiro with production assistance by Joel Stein, and written by Samantha Gourash and Kenny Martin. Unsolved Murders True Crime Stories stars Carter Roy and Wendy McKenzie. The amazing cast of voice actors includes, by alphabetical order, Mike Capozzi, Kimberly Holland, Mick Lambeth, Nicholas Massu, Manu Narayan, Gregory Polson, and Vanessa Richardson.